from the trenches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to From the Trenches, real life in the accounting industry. I'm your host, David Boyer from Sequel CFO. I'm joined here with Paul Meisner from Freedom Accounting in his Freedom Accounting t-shirt. And we are coming to you live from BGL RegTech Melbourne. Over 400 accountants are here. It's the end of their national roadshow. Paul, it's great to be here.
It is great, David. Thank you very much. Lots of conferences, but this one's a little bit different, which we'll talk about in a minute, but it is terrific to be here and terrific to see so many accountants here. David, what is your best of for this RegTech?
Best of for RegTech for me, this seems to be the most compliance-focused event that I've been to in the accounting space. And we've always got our eyes out, even though we don't get to go to everything. But the exhibitors that are here, they're around compliance, around SMSF automation. It's around company secretarial work. The add-ons, there's a really cool provider here that's outsourced self-managed super. So the story they're telling me, you can get a super fund done for $950, sell it to your client for $3,500, free up your staff so they can do more value add work or just additional work. I never even knew. And this is, what are they called?
It's been around for a while.
But they're down in Geelong though. And I kind of just, maybe I just missed the boat on this. I thought they were all overseas, all of these offshoring, outsourcing. But the concept of outsourcing locally, I never thought of it. So it's just a cool place. If you're one of those accountants who doesn't buy into this, I don't want to be a tech consultant, I don't want to be a business advisor, I like what I do, here's where you come to work out what you do better.
My best of, and on the back of that, I think you're right about the content, you know, certainly slightly different, a little bit more technical heavy than what we otherwise see, apart from a couple of keynotes, a bit more practical. What I really like is it gets the accountants out that otherwise, you know, I feel don't necessarily come to conferences. It takes a fair bit of practical stuff to get them away from their desk, and just seeing and meeting and chatting to some of the accountants who are here, you know, it's not the same people that just go to every conference for the sake of going to conference. You know, they're here to learn, and certainly it gets them away from their desk. And good to see them on a lovely day, lovely venue by the water.
The extension of Jeff's shed that we're at.
Exactly. David, best on ground for the week. What have you seen?
Well, I actually reckon this publication's probably been featured in my best on ground more than any others. It's the Myer Pulse blog. Brilliant, great content comes out of the Myer Pulse team. A good post about avoiding the dreaded scope creep. This isn't the first time a scope creep post has made my best on ground. Practice Ignition did a really good one as well. The reason why is that if you play in the advisory space, this is your number one risk by far. Because if you do a good job, clients want more of you. If they want more of you, it takes more time. But you haven't, if you're doing fixed pricing or value pricing, maybe you haven't accounted for that, which is more than likely if you're just starting with value pricing and advisory work. This article goes through the high-level elements that you want, fully scope the job, document the job, explain to the client how you'll handle amendments, discuss. What it doesn't go through, and these are the steps, is the difficulty of actually having the conversation with the client when you're going out of scope, because they usually budget for this sort of work. And if you start getting involved with them with a project and it starts to cost more, not because of an inefficiency, they just expect more from you, they start to miss out on, getting the most out of the job. And I've heard at the worst end of this, one of the criticisms I've got from a client is, but you're my company accountant, you should care and you should just do this. And sometimes that happens when you're doing some of the bigger consulting gigs. So I like this post. It brings awareness and it gives a good structure around how to manage scope creep, but it misses out in the difficulty of actually having these conversations with clients. Paul's found a problem.
It's a wonderfully light article written by a marketing person. I think running compliance jobs in a small accounting firm, the scope for me rarely creeps. And here's why.
I'm talking about advisory, not compliance.
I'm talking about accounting firms.
Okay.
Whether that's advisory or not. And I think this holds water. Bear with me a sec. So what I think happens is failing to scope the work when it starts. I don't believe the scope creeps anywhere that materially affects your budget. What I reckon is accountants always start not charging for stuff and giving it away immediately. I think the scope creeps from day one, not in year two, in year three, etc. I believe in pricing, everything should be its own job.
For compliance. But this article, it starts off with by saying, if there's one thing that can fill a consultant with dread, I don't think this is addressing... I agree with you. I just don't think this is addressing compliance work. But you
this is
people come to me really often saying, I'm struggling to make money off my compliance. Advisory. Advisory goes two ways. Either people struggle to make money out of because they're really good at it and they just keep giving and they get the fee or the value price fee wrong, or they charge client for something that they're not delivering. They're the two things that happen when accounting firms start to venture out into compliance, because they'll charge the client for a Fathom report or a Spotlight report every month, and then the firm won't have a conversation with them, so the report just sits in the email inbox. This is when it's done badly. And then the client says, well, I'm not getting any value out of this. Or you're doing a good job in explaining it, and the client says, I just want this more. Can you just do this? Can you just... And you genuinely get scope creep on it.
I think it's not so much that you charge and then under-deliver. I think it's that it's you deliver from day one. There's 100 calls about dealing with the tax office. There's 100 calls
for
about
compliance.
Dealing with their system in advisory or, you know, I think there's a pricing ebook, freedommechanicsystem.com. Mentioned that a couple of times. Look, this is a good article, as you said, to give out to your clients who are running consulting jobs.
No, I reckon we can learn from it for running our practice on advisory work.
Cool. No worries. Well, I don't, but that's cool.
You don't do advisory work.
Anyway, I don't think this relates as much to firms. Anyway, have a read of the article.
What's your best on ground, mate?
My best on ground, Jody Pater had found this in Accounting Today.
We like Jody.
Does the location of my accounting practice matter? And this is interesting because Jody's point, and I think this is very valid, and in fact, I share this point, is that physically, you aren't located anymore. You don't need to be located anymore to have impact. You know, you need somewhere to put your staff, but that doesn't matter. You know, you're not impressing clients as much now with a certain office. This article was sort of saying if you wanted CBD clients, you've got to go to CBD. If you want high net worth clients, you've got to go sit in a fancy suburb. Look, I kind of think it's interesting because my view is twofold on this. One is I totally get it. I've worked from cafes. I've got clients around the world. My location has never fundamentally dictated where I've got clients or my success in getting clients, because I've largely got clients online and from anywhere. And largely, I think our offices are more being dictated about close to the zero office 8 years ago when we started rather than anything else. But here's the other side that I think the location does matter. I'd never run my firm from the city. I'd always been in suburban accounting firms or wherever. We were based in Camberwell when we started up. We were based in a cafe when we originally started up. Had an office in, this is for Five Ways, had an office in Camberwell. It wasn't till we moved to a co-working space in the CBD, I'd never worked in the CBD before, that I could not believe just the proximity. Things happened from not working in the city to working in the city. More meetings, more opportunities, more general interest in me and my services that had to have been a direct correlation to the geographical location.
So, listeners actually don't know this story, but you and I met on the tour of the Collins Street address that you and I both worked out of. That's how we first met. So straight away, does the city address matter? This podcast would not exist if not for you and I considering moving to Collins Street.
And that's the thing. So this for me is not necessarily where it didn't... It mattered to clients because I guess it might have been because it was a busier area rather than... But it got us introduced and the podcast. But just in terms of access to clients, like I none of my clients were necessarily in the city, but I think all of them at a point in time that was more common than coming to Camberwell...
Yeah.
Pass through the city. I have far more face-to-face meetings with clients in the city than I ever had in Camberwell.
That's a very... Well, that's because Camberwell Junction's a nightmare to navigate around.
Very true.
The When I moved to Collins Street, my clients didn't... Well, I moved to the city because I kept going out to clients. It was so much easier to have a base that was central rather than in South Caulfield. Now our business model's changed. I've moved back to South Caulfield so that I can spend more time. I don't have to commute anymore. So I've got time with my daughter. I've got an office in South Caulfield. But I'm still at the city address because I like being around people and things happen. And things have happened. Agree, Paul. Well done.
Your worst on ground, David.
This is as far as easy worst on grounds. We had an easy worst on ground when the CPA saga was happening. We now have an easy worst on ground. Last week, superannuation took an absolute belting at the Royal Commission into banks. It was absolutely jaw-dropping. I'm just going to read out some of the things that got uncovered. National Australia Bank charged more than 4,000 dead customers $3 million in fees and could be facing up to 100 criminal charges. Criminal!
$3 million.
The worst part is they then spent between 5 and 6 months discussing ways to keep charging super members the wrong amounts. So they knew they were doing the wrong thing, and their ethical compass, their moral compass was so warped, they spent 6 months of internal meetings working out whether it was the right or wrong thing to do. Unbelievable. Unbelievable how bad that is. It's affected 200,000 customers, Paul. It is an absolute scandal. AMP's profits down 74%. We just found out on the back of all of this. Absolute worst on ground because superannuation Australia has been pitched as, you see Paul Keating talk about it, it's going to be the thing that saves our country because we have this ageing population. And now you've got these financial institutions that are largely trusted that have just, they've just breached public trust massively. It is worst on ground by so far, Paul.
The Banking Royal Commission is throwing up an awful lot of stuff. You know, I think we spoke about it with Ron just before. Check out that episode. Just about the fact that in all of this freedom of financial information reform and super funds, the banks were always like, oh, no, we've got the best, you know, the best interest duty. Wow. For the management of National Australia Bank to spend 5 or 6 months thinking about whether or not dead people shouldn't be charged. This is bad. This is bad for the banking industry, and hopefully we get some sensible reform and they see through some of this lobbying.
The unfortunate thing for me is, as far as a deposit-taking institution and lending, the core business of banking, I trust our banks. They're well-regulated. They didn't collapse in the GFC. But for everything else that they try to sell me, I'm not interested anymore. That's the damage.
I think a lot more will come out of that. Worst on ground for me, just a quick one. And I don't know how long this has been an issue because I don't use this particular feature, but I was going through a P&L with a profit and loss statement with InZero with a client of mine, and she was looking at one version of the P&L for the same date, same time, and I was looking at it through a different, not a different report, same report, just different configuration of the report type. And it got the one profit and loss for the identical dates, David, under the identical method, accrual method, showed a different profit figure. Like, I just cannot believe that you can have a date range.
I used to use Leap software, the legal software, and I'd look at matter codes. It was completely different when they were first moved to the cloud. It just didn't work.
This is exactly the same P&L report, exactly the same dates, just with it's something about the comparable figures. The way it compares different years, but the same report comparing the same period came up with a different result. So for all of the automation and all of the, trusting the data and the data being right is still not a given.
I love how you're one of the original cloud advocates and now when it doesn't work, you're just bang, right on them, holding them to account.
You can't have a profit and loss that doesn't give, like, arguably that is the corner.
The balance sheet reconcile?
Like, I didn't get that far.
That'd be really interesting because I wonder if it just if half a transaction went missing.
I didn't to be honest. I didn't look because I had two different versions of a P&L from three different ways you could structure it to use the same data. Anyway,
people from Zero, listen, I'd get onto that quickly, guys.
System, it's a known issue. According to us.
To us or according to them?
According to them. Good. Sorry.
Cool. According to us.
Absolutely. Thanks, listeners. And we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks again for listening to another episode of From the Trenches. David and I love hearing feedback
from all of our listeners. If you ever have any content, feel free to reach out. I can be reached at Paul Meissner on LinkedIn or on Twitter at Fiveways Group.
I'm on Twitter at David Boyar, B-O-Y-A-R, on LinkedIn, David Boyar.